I get lucky.
Must be 21. Gambling problem in Ohio? Call Gambling Helpline at 1-800-589-9966.
Hello again, baseball.
It's time for In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a fantastic day to get some stuff done in and around your house. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. How are you?
I'm dandy, thanks.
Dandy.
And what about you?
I don't think I can beat dandy. I'm doing well, by the way, but I don't know about beating dandy.
Well,
I need a trump card for that.
Fantastic would be that, would beat that. But I'm doing well, man. We're
good.
We're really excited about the upcoming forecast and getting some stuff down.
I hear you.
Although we, according to the forecast, may see some pop-up showers today. It's not going to be a gully washer, so to speak. But starting tomorrow, gorgeous weather.
Oh, yeah. The outlook, the forecast is beautiful.
Temperatures for the next couple of days on Sunday and Monday won't get out of the 70s. Overnight lows can be down to the 50s, upper 50s. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, more sunshine, but we do get up into the 80s. And just before we went on the show, you and I were talking about this is the ideal time to get started on rejuvenating your lawn, your landscape beds, and getting rid of some pesky weeds.
Absolutely. And with the temperatures and the forecast, the way that it's predicted to be in the next couple, 4 or 5 days, it's the optimal time to get rid of some things that have been creeping into your lawn or even perhaps into your landscape beds and just take care of it. Temperatures won't be perfect. And this is an ideal time just to get that lawn and turf ready to go right after it in September and sow grass seed if, in fact, you need to do that.
Mm-hmm. I got the chance to cut my grass yesterday. And lucky you. Yeah, noticed a couple of things, as I mentioned, back where that stump was, where we were unable to do a couple of things back there for a while. Creeping Charlie starting to creep back into the...
yeah?
Into the lawn, so we've got to pay attention to that. And I still have a little bit of nuts edge on just on this one corner where at the front of the house, when
right.
you walk up to the front of the house, it seems to, well, you know what, it seems like that's where all of that stuff had blown into that corner and it's working its way out. So
oh,
I've
yeah.
got to tend to that.
You know, it's everything that you're saying is what I'm hearing and have been hearing for the last week or 2 weeks. Creeping Charlie, mm-hmm. nuts edge. Quack grass, crab grass, spurge right now. You know, that's another one that's getting people. Just all kinds of stuff that has just creeped into the landscape beds, the lawns. And a lot of it has to do with everybody's happy in the turf, even weeds. You know, we've had a lot of moisture.
Uh-huh.
And we've also had a lot of, you know, these just ungodly temperatures, you know, a lot of humidity. And everything's just like... it's a mess,
mm-hmm.
and they were perfect conditions just for everything just to go crazy.
Right.
It's nuts. It's really nuts. But now's the time to take back your lawn. You know, don't let it take you. You take it.
Yeah. You mentioned something I don't think I'm familiar with. Quack grass.
Oh, it's like, yeah, quack grass. You know, it's a real thick, white, bunched up type of grass. It looks like kind of... It resembles crabgrass in a way. Just a lot of weird stuff mm-hmm. out there. What was it the other day that Bob Bard, I had to pull my phone out and check out my text messages. Bob sent me a photograph of something that was plaguing somebody. And Bob from Bard's Nursery, we'll touch base occasionally and talk about different things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, have you seen this? What's this? Or what do you think about that?
Networking.
And that's why I like our industry.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to something he had sent me the other day, it was like, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that. And believe me, there's a lot of things I've never seen or nor am I familiar with. And I'll tell you straight up, I don't know, but we'll certainly find out. We know where to go. Bob wasn't sure. And I think it was called Japanese stilt grass. Now, I still have to look that one up. So I'm a little stilted about that, but it was Japanese stilt grass. Now I got to look at my text message and make sure that in fact is what it was, and I just need to kind of reference that. It was the weirdest looking thing, and it kind of tall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you see weird stuff like that, different things like that, where did they come from? That's the big question.
I was just about to say that is, where does that stuff originate? How did it get into our lawn, and how can we stop it from coming back?
You know, a lot of it's, you know, birds can disperse things like that, seed. So can, you know, the wind. And a lot of times, too, believe this or not, a lot of garden centers, you know, all of us who have, you know, garden centers and nurseries, you know, that's why we're particular about the topsoils and the different things that we bring in, because we know where it's coming from, for mm-hmm. the most part, the mm-hmm. quality of that soil. However, a lot of people who sell that real cheap topsoil that's 99 cents a bag,
that you just $1.49, don't know.
That's where a lot of this stuff comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just various parts of the United States, somebody says, hey, you know what? We need to get rid of this bit of soil here as we grade things down. Let's bag it. Mm-hmm. Let's sell it. And that's why we start seeing weeds that we typically don't commonly see. And that's kind of part of it as well.
Sure. And then once it's in, you got to figure out how to get rid of it.
Oh, believe me, I've been around to different, you know, stores, and I've seen these blistered topsoil bags. When I say that, the plastic bag itself, they're done up in such a way now they biodegrade so quickly, and especially what's on top starts to blister from the sun, the UV mm-hmm. rays, and all of a sudden, you know, a little bit of moisture. You start seeing some really cool weeds.
Right there at the store.
Yeah, right there at the store. So it's like show and tell. Let's let's come over here and let's do a little identification.
Maybe some science teachers can go to that.
There you go. But I am not making that up. That's, you know, that's my two cents right there. I'm sticking by it. It's funny when you see that, Ernie. I kid you not. But I think that's where a lot of that stuff is being introduced.
Mm. Agreed. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a lot going on this weekend, and did you get a chance to watch any of the Bengals game Thursday night?
I did. I was impressed.
They look good.
I'm excited.
This is the year. They're going all the way.
I sure hope
Buy your Super Bowl tickets now.
I'm sold. I'm in. You convinced me. Well, AJ McCarron's really looked. He's top notch.
Trading?
No.
Selling?
No. Not at all. Not at
just
all.
Just a joke. I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
He's looking really good. Yeah. And it's nice to know that you have a backup quarterback as of his stature.
Mm-hmm.
Looks really good. You know, high school football's kicking off too, and I know that's one of your favorites since you were an ex pioneer.
That's right. And they
all American.
I wasn't an All-American.
Oh, come on. You always tell everybody that. I hear it all the time. I was All-American. I was All-State, first team.
Nope, never happened. Halfway decent player. But I had just loved the Simon Kenton Pioneers and Coach Mark Sperry and all the entire staff. Has just done wonders. And I think I saw in the paper last week they were ranking number one over there in Northern Kentucky, which is fantastic news for them, and wish them all the best of luck. And, of course, all the high schools, it's great, you know, living in Villa Hills, too. I see a lot of the Spartans advance to different high schools in the area, and it's mm-hmm. great to watch them. I just saw where, for the life of me, I can't remember the young man's name, but he was a Spartan football player, that youth football, and then went to, I think, Cutting Catholic, and then wound up walking on down at Western. He's been a starter for
really?
Last couple of years.
Kind of stories.
I love
you know?
Those.
Yeah.
Determination, grit, grind it out.
Perseverance, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No doubt. You know, but your Simon Kenton Pioneers, I think, what, last year they were 13-1? Did they win the state or did they lose?
No, they lost in the semifinals.
The last game? Okay.
The Lafayette.
Interesting.
Yep.
But, I found it interesting. There's a section this morning in the paper, Cream of the Crop, all about high school football.
My name in there?
I didn't see it. Yeah, lineman coach for the Pioneers. You know, something which really I find interesting too, the classifications of schools by size,
I guess,
maybe enrollment. So I'm not even familiar with what a Class 6A is, which is what Simon Kenton is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a larger type of school?
Yes. Yep.
So Cooper, Ryle, Connor, they're 6A.
Uh-huh.
It used to be 4A, I thought.
Was the biggest school.
Because when I went to Holmes High School, it was that way. So, and I don't even think Holmes. Yeah, I guess they're 4A still. Oh, they had a great record last year, 4-7. They didn't mention them much, but okay. Little.
Yeah, they're a
little cameo
program.
Mention. Yeah, they're growing. But yeah, it's exciting. I can always hear where I live. I'm not too far away from Scott High School, so I can always hear the speaker on Friday nights.
Yeah.
What's going on.
You hear the band coming down?
Yeah, you can hear the band sometimes. Yeah.
But always
were you in the band? Did you opt for the fuzzy hat at halftime?
No, when you quit
playing and when your career was ended with that
shoulder
knee injury?
Shoulder.
That's right, shoulder.
No, but it was always neat to have the band take us down to the field. You know, back then the football field and the locker room were what felt like at times 2 miles apart. But we'd all get dressed and then come out. Mm-hmm. The coach would hold us up until the band would lead us onto the field. It was cool.
Yeah. You know, remembering the football field, especially at Holmes High School, and I don't mean to get off on this subject, but they had the old cinder track years ago.
Yeah, we had that.
Did you? And were you able to walk around the whole field at that time? Because a lot of high schools, they would just keep all the fans on one side and they'd block off the other side. There wouldn't be another set of bleachers across the field for the visiting team or...
You know, I can't remember. It's been 100 years since high school, but you know, it's a neat environment these days. It's much more organized and fun, and it's great to see the families and everybody get together. That's why you got to get all your yard work and everything done
before you
go to the high school football game.
That's right. And I was a little envious when you said you had mowed your grass. Was it yesterday?
Yesterday. Got home late in the afternoon and...
Didn't you get any rain?
Not yesterday, no.
Really?
No.
We had a pretty good little shower down at the store.
And as a matter of fact, my neighbor across the street, Dave's mower broke down.
Your chest, you got all jacked up, didn't you? You went over there with your big mower, didn't you?
At the insistence of my wife, she said, you know, you really ought to go over there and mow his grass. He's working weird hours, and it had gotten pretty tall, so I went over and...
That was nice.
Knocked out his front yard. Didn't get a chance to do the backyard because it was starting to get dark, and I wanted to finish mine, so I came back across. And
so you started with your neighbor's yard first. I like that. Put your neighbor first. That was good. I didn't get an opportunity to mow my grass this week. You know, we've had a few showers off and on, and I don't like to mow it when it's wet, but it needs to be cut. I need to cut it. So, and still continue to cut your turf at the... Mm-hmm. You know, at the highest setting that you can, or the second highest setting, that's very, very important.
You know, probably ought to reach out to our friend over at Bud Herbert Motors and find out, would this be a good time to just do a little late season sharpening of the blade and
wouldn't hurt
get ready?
You know, if you think, you know, that really is determined by if you really inspect your turf, the blades after you cut, if it's got a jagged look to it, your blade definitely needs to be sharpened.
Yeah, I was just...
You can determine that.
I was thinking that it's not going to be long. The leaves are going to start falling. And especially if you do any mulching, you may want to make sure sharpen that blade up a little bit.
It wouldn't hurt to sharpen your blade. Did you have your mower serviced this year, to be honest?
Yeah, remember we took both our things over and we got them taken care of. And
that's when my little mower was trying to eat yours up. You're right. Gosh, where is this year? Where is the season gone?
Yeah, it is... It never ceases to amaze me how quickly this goes by. I saw the very first pumpkin spice flavored creamer on the shelf this morning when I came in. I had to stop and get some creamer for my coffee. And I was looking through and went, no, not yet. And it's already on the shelf.
Well, you know what? We're just a couple of weeks. We'll be right into September. And September 21st is the last day.
I guess I ought to get the Christmas tree out.
Yeah, you might as well. Why not? Speaking of, I mean, we're still at the store. We're getting ready to, we're fast approaching the fall season. We're gearing up for the fall season. We're going to encourage a lot of people, too, to start going out and getting more involved with rejuvenating your pots and your window boxes and so forth, because a lot of people have been struggling with those things.
Yeah.
You know, even in the landscape beds, you know, things have just really been getting beaten up. We need to freshen those things up with that nice fall look. And I'm talking about mums, ornamental peppers.
I was just about to mention Todd out there at Baton's. Check on him because I know that they were getting their mums all geared up when we were out there a couple of months ago. And I bet they are starting to flush out now.
They're starting, probably most mums are just starting to really set some decent buds. Some might be cracking if they're shaded or they're forced.
That's what I meant. I mean, they're on that cusp.
There's a lot of good mom growers here in the Cincinnati area. And Ostendorf's a great grower. Ron Robin grows a lot of moms. There's a lot of moms that are growing in this area from a quality standpoint. And look for those from your local garden centers and nurseries. You know, those are all throughout the area. And try and support your local garden centers and nurseries that are growing these moms, because that's so important. And I can't say this enough. They are top quality moms. And when you're growing moms, and, you know, there's a trick to that. You know, you're pinching those back a couple of different times.
Mm-hmm.
And then spacing is so critical. If you're not spacing those moms like you should be in a timely fashion, they'll be more upright and narrow. And when I see that, when I see a nice round growth habit or pattern to a mom, I know it was spaced. If it's more upright, taller in height, it was reaching. It was too close to other moms. And those growers, they don't care about quality. They're growing for quantity. They're growing for numbers.
So that matters. If it's too tall, it's
not a very space. Yeah, I'm saying narrow, and you know, it doesn't have that nice rounded look.
Yeah. A full pot effect.
A full pot effect. Absolutely. That's what you're looking for. You know, how was this mom grown?
Mm-hmm.
And that tells a lot about a grower. It tells a lot about the quality of that plant. And, you know, look for some of the larger moms, too, like the 12-inch moms. I know that where we get our moms from, that, you know, there's this little green netting that's layered over the top of those as they're growing. And as they're growing, they grow up through that netting. And you can't really see the netting once they start to bud up and so forth and open up with color. And what that does, that keeps them from getting lazy and opening up, especially when they get wet. It keeps them upright and keeps them from splitting. So those are little tidbit things that tells you how things were grown from a quality standpoint.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And as much as you what? Hate to say it, we're getting you ready for fall.
Absolutely. Just right. Well, that's the season that's coming upon us.
Hate to be the one to break the bad news.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. One of my favorite times of the year.
It's definitely my favorite time of the year. That's why I like things that turn those beautiful fall colors.
Uh-huh.
Just to give you an example, you know, the itis, you know, it's a great shrub, turns that burgundy color in the fall. The burning bush that everybody's commonly familiar with.
Yeah.
Beautiful red color. What's the other one? Father Gitala, Gardeni, or Mount Airy. Beautiful orange and red colors. You know, just litter that shrub. It's beautiful stuff. There's nothing better than when you start seeing the maple trees turning red or yellow or taking on that orange hue. Beautiful stuff. And I love the fall. I'm like you. And the temperatures get there. It's football season. It's not uncomfortable to work out in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things kind of come into play.
Get the fire pits roaring.
Yes, fire pits.
I just started chuckling about that when you were describing the fall colors and the crisp temperatures. I guess the countdown's on before Lisa has the first fire in the fireplace of the house. You know,
it won't be long. No. It really won't be long. And we're also really trying to get our homeowners to set the stage for if you're needing to revamp your lawn and so forth, or repair troubled areas, or get rid of some of those pesky broadleaf weeds that are in your lawn, now is the time to start working on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't think about that late September or sometime middle, early October. You're starting to push the envelope at that point in time in October. And there we start seeing those average, you know, first initial frost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, around the middle of October, the 15th, the 17th. And that starts to dampen our ability to perhaps sow grass seed, if that's in fact what you need to do. So think about it now. Also, you know, we're talking about Bob Bard over at Bard's Nursery and Scott Maddox out there at Maddox Nursery, and those guys, they do a lot of landscape installs. If you're thinking about doing some fall landscaping and you're not going to do it yourself, which there's nothing wrong with that, definitely get with those guys or professionals. Get them to help you line up, you know, a design of some sort. And they'll certainly do those installs for you. Now's the time to start setting that up and making those appointments.
Mm-hmm.
don't put that off either, you know, because this guy start getting busy. The fall is a great time to plant. And I wish more homeowners would look at it, you know, as such.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of times we get busy, the kids are back in school and all that other good stuff, and then we kind of forget, you know, it's still a good planting time.
It is overwhelming for those that have young ones that are just entering the school system, or even more so for those who are mm-hmm. just a little bit older and in high school.
Right.
I just thankfully went through that when it was a simpler time for us. But I've read a couple of articles where what it takes now to put a child back into a school system, I don't think I could afford to do it. There'd be a little homeschooling. Come here, Junior.
Oh, my gosh.
Three goes in to nine.
Six times.
To do the Jethro Bodine. Yeah, not for not, with, leave not.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Good old homeschooling. That's the Kentucky way of doing it. I like it.
Yeah, but
they're like 48th in the nation.
It is overwhelming, and we're not trying to make light of how much the moms and dads do for the kids. But,
right.
You know, you also have to allow some time for yourself, and that's a great stress reliever, too, working in your lawn.
It is. And, you know, which, as we're talking about thinking about fall plantings and especially trees, and that's where this is going to lead me to, is the Taking Root Initiative. And the Taking Root Initiative is trying to plant 2 million trees by the year 2020. And most people know that we've lost a lot of our ash trees and some other heritage trees and for different and various reasons. So if, in fact, you feel the urge or you feel energetic enough that the plant, we want you to plant a tree. I don't care what kind of tree that it is.
We're going to plant quite a few of them.
A small ornamental tree. It could be a shade tree. It could be a fruit tree. You name it. You need to go online to takingroot.info and register that tree. We need to reach and attain that goal so mm-hmm. bad. It's all about diversity here in the tri-state area. So keep that in mind, the Taking Root Initiative and that vision to plant 2 million trees by the year 2020. I can't emphasize the importance of that. Trees are such a benefit. You know, they remove CO2 from the air, you know, all the automobiles that are driving through the tri-state area. You know, they provide shade. Mm-hmm. They're so important to our livelihood. Just, I can't say it enough. Just habitat for birds, all that good stuff. So yeah. Get back into the mode and just start thinking about planting trees.
Well, let me ask you about this. Well, hold on. I'll ask you when we come back about a couple of things about the planting the trees.
Sure.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking about planting trees and the tree initiative. And one of the questions I had for you, Tony, is say, for instance, you have some volunteers that you want to replant or mm-hmm. transplant.
Yeah.
Can we use those to register? Mammy and Pappy had this beautiful mimosa tree in their backyard. And
a lot of volunteers.
Had to take it out. Mm-hmm. A lot of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And they love them. So we're going to replant as many of those as we can.
You could.
But, I mean, can we register each individual tree?
Well, you know, that's the question you have to take up with Taking Root. No pun intended. But the reason why I say that is because of this. They're already established. They've already, you know, volunteered on their own.
Uh-huh.
So, really, it isn't. There's nothing new about it.
Okay.
It is new, but there's nothing new that you did.
Right.
Personally, to do that, if in fact you want to do so,
we can at least get on.
Yeah,
you know.
So that's a question that I would leave up to the guys or the staff from Taking Root, that committee. However, I don't think that's how I'd want to approach it.
Okay,
that's me personally. So and don't get your feelings hurt.
No,
I don't want you to go, whoa.
No. And we're still going to add a couple of other trees as well, but mm-hmm. We're going to put a bunch of those. Along this fence line.
Right.
And the other thing that I wanted to ask you is a lot of people will be getting new trees, and it might be a first time for them
mm-hmm.
Putting them in the ground and planting them. What is the best way to look at that?
Well, there's a number of ways to look at that, and it's a great question, as a matter of fact.
Well, thanks.
And the most important thing I want to emphasize is when you're planting a tree, a lot of times homeowners, they're just not familiar with that whole process. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why For example, and I don't want to go off on another subject matter, but I'm not an accountant, so I got to trust my accountant. So therefore, homeowners, you know, you're not gardeners or you're kind of new to it, and there's nothing wrong with that. Don't feel apprehensive about coming into the nursery or the garden center and just asking questions like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're there, right? And we want you to ask those questions, and we want you to be successful when you're planting, because if you're successful, you're coming back. You're going to catch the bug. You're going to get into gardening. So it's not that we're trying to set you up for failure, or we don't want to talk to you or think that you should already know that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's why everybody is in their profession, and that's what that's all about. But planting a tree, the most important thing is that I want to emphasize this to most homeowners. Do not plant it deep. A lot of times, homeowners, they want to bury the tree or the shrub a little too deep, and I'm talking 2, 3, 4 inches. And if you do something of the sort like that, that is not good, because that's a slow demise. It's a slow death. It's a suffocation. It's smothering that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't happen quickly. It just happens over a period of time. And when you lift that tree out of there, if they bring it into the nursery, if I happen to go out and see it, I could see the wet mark that's going up the trunk of the tree and know that that tree was buried too deep. So I that's probably what I want to say first and foremost. Do not feel compelled to bury that tree with soil up the trunk or mulch.
Okay.
And it happens, but I just want to put some emphasis on that.
Well, what's the proper depth?
The depth of where it comes out of the container. So okay. If you're buying your tree, typically you will find a tree. It could be in a 5-gallon container. It could be in a 7-gallon container. It could be in a 10-gallon container, a 15, a 25. And those are just various size containers that a lot of growers will grow in. A lot of times we call it pot and pot. You know, they're in large pots, and they just slide into another pot that's in the ground in the growing range at growing facilities, at large nurseries.
I gotcha.
So if you're taking your plant, your tree, or your shrub out of a pot, a lot of times it's real simple. I take a utility knife and just score up the side of that pot on 2 sides or 3 sides and gently peel back the plastic pot. It makes it a little bit easier to get it off, get the pot off or away from the root structure itself. And when you look at that root ball, just measure that with a tape measure or, you know, yardstick, whatever it is that you have at home. You do not want to dig your hole any deeper than that. If you want to elevate it a little bit, then dig your hole just a couple of inches, a little shallow, and come up to it. So when you dig your hole, what's really important, too, when you're planting a tree or a shrub, is to dig your hole, do your best to at least dig the hole 2 times the width of the size of the root structure of the pot, or if in fact, your tree or shrub comes bald and burlap. That is something else we'll talk about here in just a moment or two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But dig your hole 2 times the width of the pot, not deep. The soil you take out of the ground, I also want to put some, you know, emphasis on this as well. Do not discard that. That soil is ultimately what that plant's going to grow in, be it a tree or a shrub. So when you dig your hole, set that soil to the side, and I want you to look at that soil by volume and say to yourself, I'm going to add about 25% compost. It could be compost manure. It could be pine fines, which we also call soil conditioner. It could be peat moss. And mix it in thoroughly. It could be a combination of those things. Mix it in thoroughly with your existing soil. So what we're doing, we're amending that soil, making it better. Clay is not bad. If we lived in Florida, I say this all the time, if we had all sand, you'd wish like heck you had a little bit of clay, because clay, it holds nutrients. Clay will help hold moisture. But when you have too much clay, that's not good.
Right.
So we just need to make it better and use that existing soil. And then you'll fill back in around the tree with that soil after you thoroughly mix it up. Now, there's 2 other things that come into play here. One is I really encourage people, when you're planting something new, to use 1 of 2 things. Use Fertilume's root stimulator. It's genetically engineered with hormones and it's low in nitrogen to get the roots off to a really good start. Also, I like to use Aspomus Biotone with mycorrhiza. There's a lot of interesting facts about mycorrhiza. I am not a mycorrhiza expert, but those are various types of bacteria that encourage root development. very good products to use. Stay away from the stuff in the green boxes, the stuff that's high in nitrogen. I don't want you to do that. Also, what's important, when you're planting a tree or a shrub, know what its cultural requirements are. You know, how much sun, what type of soil, does it like a high alkaline soil? Is it like an acidic-based soil? Does it like it neutral? So kind of know what that pH level is. That's very important, too. And if you're not sure, take a soil sample and take it out to the extension office, have it tested, and just tell them, you know, what it is you want to plant. For example, if you're planting magnolias, they like acidic soil. If you're planting boxwoods, you know, they like a little acidic soil. That's what's important. If you're planting blueberries, real acidic, 4.5 to 5 range. So know the growing cultural requirements for the shrub or tree that you're planting. Mm-hmm. So once you fill everything back in, then I want you to mulch with 2 to 3 inches of a good mulch. And as you come close to the trunk, taper it down. Do not take the mulch up over the trunk. A lot of times you see what we call volcano mulching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The worst thing that you can do. So if you just follow those simple steps, dig your hole twice the width of the pot or the root ball, not deep, wide, add a good soil amendment to your existing soil, fill back in with that existing soil, don't discard it because that's what your plant's going to ultimately grow in, and use, you know, a root stimulator or Espoma's Biotone, stay away from the high nitrogen fertilizers, and just let it come on and get acclimated and do its own thing. And there's a real simple little rule to follow, or what we call, you know, in the industry, the first year your plants kind of sleep, the second year they creep, and it's that third season you see them leap. That's when they're getting rooted in, and that's when they start putting on their best growth.
Gotcha. Can you repeat that formula again?
Well, it's not a real formula, but it's kind of like the way we look at it. The first year they creep, the second year they... The first year they sleep, the second year they creep, the third year they leap.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that third year is where you really start noticing some really nice growth on a lot of your shrubs and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you water, a good deep drink less often, not more, you know, not frequent. You do not want, nothing wants to sit in water. You do not want to water it too much.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, that's worse than not enough. And when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come out of the break, we'll talk about the other type of plant that you can plant when it's a tree or shrub. It can be in a bald and burlap type setup.
Good deal. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Your local home and garden guys need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking a lot about getting some trees in the ground. And, Tony, you were talking before we came into the break about container trees or trees in containers going from container to container.
Right. Yeah, purchasing container trees for the homeowner is a lot easier to work with versus the other option that a lot of times you'll find various trees and shrubs come in, and they can be bald and burlapped.
Mm-hmm.
And typically bald and burlapped items are items that are just, you know, dug early in the spring, could be at various times when it's conducive for digging. And, you know, our good friend Tim Back, you know, he does a lot of that kind of stuff. You know, he sells the large trees, et cetera, et cetera. But the bald and burlap trees and shrubs typically come a little bit larger than what you'll find in the nurseries and garden centers that's in containers.
Right.
Not always, but, you know, on average for the most part. So it's going to take a lot more effort on your part as a homeowner to maneuver or carry or handle the bald and burlap stuff, because believe me, they weigh quite a bit. There's a lot of weight there. Yeah. There really is. And sometimes you better have a good friend or know some good friends at the nursery that might loan you a tree dolly. There are special tree dollies that help you, you know, maneuver and get those various sizable trees into position and, you know, all that other good stuff.
Yeah.
But when you buy something that's bald and burlap, the burlap today that's on that encompasses the root structure of those plants is biodegradable. It will eventually biodegrade in the root structures of those plants and obviously get out and penetrate the soil and get rooted in well enough without you having to worry about it or be concerned about it. Now, the most important thing about when you're planting a bald and burlap type of tree or a shrub is that a lot of that, the burlap is pinned in with little nails that hold the burlap together. And, you know, don't worry that much about that at all. What I want you to worry about is the string that's around that ball and how it girdles and ties around the trunk of the tree. So when you're finished planting that shrub that's bald and burlapped or the tree, make sure that you cut that string, because as that tree starts to grow or that shrub starts to grow, that string that's tied around the trunk will girdle it and damage it. So make sure that that is cut and it's not going to impede or be detrimental to that tree's future as it starts to develop and grow.
Kind of cuts it off, I guess. Like
absolutely.
Circulation.
Yes, it's like a tourniquet. So make sure that you get rid of that. Now, the other element that comes into play, too, and this is kind of, it's a matter of preference for whomever it is that's planting these type of trees that's bald and burlap. When the tree structure is kind of large or that root system's quite large, a lot of times you will find that there's a wire basket, you know, it's around that burlap of that root structure. I've done it both ways. I've removed that. I've also cut it after I've gotten it into the ground. It doesn't matter. Just make sure that whatever it is you're doing, if that tree is so large that it requires that basket to stay on there, and this is the reason being, a lot of times as you're jockeying those large trees around, I mean, they weigh a lot. And if you don't have the right equipment, the more you start jockeying that root ball, you start damaging that root ball. Mm-hmm. It starts becoming loose. Gotcha. And that's not a good situation to put yourself in.
Mm-mm.
So the purpose of that basket is to keep those things intact. So therefore, once you get it into the ground, if you have big heavy-duty wire cutters, then you can cut some of that basket off if you want.
Okay.
But most importantly, I want to go back, you know, make sure that you cut the string that's around the trunk and around that burlap sack. That's the most important thing. And when you plant, you're going to plant it virtually almost the same way. Two times the width of the root ball itself. Keep it a little bit about ground level or just raise just a little bit and bring the soil up to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and do not bury it too deep when you're planting.
Okay. So don't.
So those are the two types. Those are the various things that you will commonly see in a nursery or the garden center. It's either going to be in a container or it's going to be bald and burlap. Both approaches work extremely well. It's just, it's a different approach when you're putting those into the ground.
So don't overthink it, really.
No, not really. Not at all. It just, but, you know, as we were just kind of, we were talking about the taking root initiative and so forth, and we're talking about how the fall, as we're fast approaching, is the best time to plant. It really is, and I wish more people would do that, but it just doesn't happen. You know, the landscapers, the landscape architects and designers, they're the ones that are really putting in all this plants and, you know, the shrubs and trees in the fall, more so than homeowners going to the nurseries and garden centers and doing it themselves. But that's okay. That's just how it is. And but the fall is the best time to plant. I can't say it enough. And if you don't get an opportunity to do it this fall, then obviously do it in the spring as
right.
well.
Now, this is really an opportunity for us to look ahead to the coming year. Not that we want to rush you out of summer.
Into
the fall, but
not in the least.
Start thinking
right.
about that.
Start thinking about it, you know. Start thinking about some landscape plants or some things if you need to rejuvenate or pull some old nasty taxes or other, you know, the yews or other shrubs out away from the foundation of the home or something that's just struggling, something that's not doing well, or an area of stuff that's in your landscape. This is a common problem, too, where we have too much stuff and it's all grown together. You get very little air movement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when things, you know, you're like, you know, when you're on an elevator, that's the best way to put it. And you're on an elevator with about 20 people. It gets really tight in there. It's uh-huh. uncomfortable. Plants feel the same way. And they don't really give you that maximum performance.
They don't get a chance to blossom if you
like you know, some plants are bigger than others. Like you're bigger than me. So when I get on that elevator, I'm kicking you over to the other side.
You're not looking forward to me stepping on.
No, you're sucking my air. Get out of the way.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Great couple of days to get some stuff done. May see a pop-up shower today, but then after that, it will be gorgeous sunshine. Temperatures barely making it to the upper 70s. Overnight lows sometimes could dip down to the 50s and a little fall-like burst here.
Ooh, nothing wrong with that. No. That's just right on.
But
right down my alley.
Me too. I wanted to ask you about, we have a bunch of lilies along the fence line in the back of the house,
mm-hmm.
and they have really put on a beautiful display, but now the blooms are gone,
mm-hmm.
and the leaves have sort of fallen over a little bit, and decided time to go ahead and trim them back.
Yeah, you can do that. Late summer is a good time to do that, Ernie, and going into the early part of fall. As a matter of fact, one of our Facebook followers, Terry Ann Campbell, just posted a beautiful photograph of her daylily in full bloom, and it's got that yellow margin on the outer edge and with that little kind of a maroon throat. Uh-huh. Beautiful daylily. And, you know, some people, if they're getting a little ratty, cut them back just as you did. And also, too, you know, if you haven't divided your daylilies in at least 3 years or so, would be a good time to do that as well. Because when you divide your daylilies about every 3 years, that keeps them really nice and tidy.
Uh-huh.
They're more vigorous. They're going to give you better bloom production. So now's a good time to start thinking about that as well.
And it won't damage the plant. That's sometimes
no, they're tough. I mean,
that's what Lisa says. You can't kill those things. Do whatever you want.
She's like, kind of like you. You can't get rid of it. You know, you just keep showing up like a bad penny.
That's
you know?
Right.
That's right.
But I have seen people who will fold the leaves over and band them together.
On daylilies?
I've not seen
it on daylilies. I think you might be referring to, you know, some of the fall bulbs that are planted at this time of year as we fast approach fall going into September and October and early mm-hmm. part of November. I think you're referring more towards the tulips and daffodils and different things in the spring.
Yeah, you're right. It's usually in a bed somewhere or a landscape bed, not
right.
necessarily that. But what does that do?
Well, what they're trying to do is encourage that dieback. You know, there's speculation. There's a lot of people that think that that encourages the dieback process quicker.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, they can cut that and start planting annuals sooner.
Oh, I see.
So that's the whole concept behind that.
Okay.
So I think that's what you're referring to,
yeah.
But I've never seen anybody do that today, Lily. It's not that you couldn't, but I don't see any benefit in it.
And what about ornamental grasses? Because we have a couple of ornamental grasses in the back there, too, that we separated early in the spring and moved over, and they did really, really well.
Right, and that's the point in time when you want, in fact, divide ornamental grasses is early in the spring. When you see them starting to push new growth and are about 2 to 3 inches in height,
right.
then you can get a very good representation of the clump itself and what's really active in that clump and what isn't, and then go ahead and divide those and separate those out and plant. You know, a lot of times your miscanthus grasses, as they get older in age, and you'll notice this, they kind of become void in the center. And then most of the growth, anything that's still new and active, is on the outer edge, almost like a volcano.
Right, right.
And a lot of times what avid gardeners will do, you know, knowledgeable gardeners, is they'll cut those pieces around the edge and fill back into the center to keep that clump tight. So that's another approach that you can do. And refrain from, you know, I know we're way early with this. I like to keep those ornamental grasses intact going through the winter months.
Right,
so,
right.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
Tony, we have Brett on the line from Fairfield. He's growing some basil inside, and he's looking for some tips on how not to kill it.
Hey, Brett. Good morning. How are you?
I like your approach to that, Brett. How do I not kill this?
You know, we try to put it in the window all day long,
mm-hmm.
and then I told her maybe just water the soil in the morning, and then in the evening maybe water the leaves with a spray bottle.
Right.
And so far the browning has gone away a little bit, but I'm not seeing a progressive amount of leaves coming back from when we pick them.
Well, a lot of that has to do with you're very limited with light, even though it's in a window. It's very tough to grow things inside like that. Not that it cannot be done. If it's up on a windowsill, you know, I don't know what direction perhaps that window is facing. Do you know, is it south, west, east, north?
East.
Okay, so you're really getting the morning sun. And basil does best if it's at least getting 6 hours or more sun a day. So going back to a couple things, my ears kind of perked up when you said, you know, spraying the foliage with water. That is something I would encourage you not to do. Although you may not be seeing anything from a negative standpoint, but being inside, I'm sure you have your air conditioning on. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You know,
it's like crazy.
Yeah, it's a little different. And, you know, most of your herbs, you know, basil in particular and so forth, and, you know, they want to be a little bit on a dry side.
Okay.
So, you know, use your index finger, stick it into the pot. If it's moist and the plant itself is not in a wilting stage, it's not necessary to water it. And a lot of times when you're watering a lot indoors and you're a little overzealous about it, you'll start seeing some issues with fungus gnats.
Okay.
And so don't set yourself up for that potential kind of like it's a nuisance. It's a problem.
Right.
And, you know, do you have any space outside to do anything like in a nice size clay pot or anything of the sort with basil?
The patio. We could use the patio.
I think you'll find you'll be a lot more successful this time of year using that approach than it would be those being on your windowsill. And I know it has that nice look, that nice ambiance, and it's right there within reach to take
right,
a few pieces. but do that kind of in the off season and make that work as best for you inside, because obviously you can't grow basil outside during the winter months.
Right. Now, does basil need a larger pot for the roots? Are the roots where they like to spread out a lot?
No, not really. You could.
Okay.
I took one of those. I can't even remember the name of it. It's a it's an earth box. I don't know if you're familiar with those or not. It was just a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, at the garden center. I took an earth box, put new soil in it, and I just took a packet of basil and spread all the seed out over the top. That whole thing is so full of basil right now. It's incredible. And just as long as you keep cutting and as the plant's rejuvenating, do not allow it to go to seed or start to bloom, because that alters the flavor. And then the plant knows, hey, I'm nearing the end of my life cycle, so I need to set seed for the next generation.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That helps a lot right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, buy a pack of basil seed, get some decent soil, nothing that stays wet and heavy. I love Fertilum soil. They call it the ultimate potting mix for that reason. It's a great potting mix.
Get some ultimate potting mix.
Yeah, the Fertilum. Okay. And it's in a red bag. It's very distinguishable at the garden centers and nurseries.
All right.
I like to cut it. This is just me. You can use it straight up. I like to cut it 50-50 with a Garden Magic topsoil.
Garden Magic topsoil.
Yeah, it's a nice topsoil. It has a little bit of sand in it, a little bit of sedge peat. It's a nice topsoil. When I cut it 50-50 with Fertilum soil, the soilless mix, it's primarily peat moss with some perlite. I think that is an ideal, excellent container mix for window boxes, containers. I've had great success with it. I really have. And I want you to follow up with us. I think you'll be a lot more successful that way with it outside. And then let's come inside during the winter and see what we can get to do whatever on the windowsill.
All right. Well, I'm about to pull into Menards right now anyway, so I'll grab those items and get my wife set up, and we'll let you know if they die or, you know.
I don't want to burst your bubble. You're not going to find Fertilum products at Menards. You got to go to a local independent garden center.
All right, I can do that.
And I don't know who's close to you, but that's where you will find the Fertilum soils.
I heard you say there's a place in Fairfield.
Yeah, Jim at Lakeview. Lakeview Nursery. Go up and see Jim Montag. He's a hoot.
Yeah.
And
tell him
we sent you.
Be careful when you say that.
Yeah.
I'll step back and say it.
Yeah, step back and say it. There you go. See Jim at Lakeview and get that soil. And I'm almost positive he carries the Garden Magic topsoil, too. And when you look at the two side by side and you marry them 50-50, it's an excellent mix.
And he'll know exactly what I'm talking about, too.
Yeah.
Definitely if I mention you guys.
Yeah, he might have a few choice words to say about us, but that's okay.
Don't try to drink out of the bird bath.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, man.
All right.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And last week we had an exciting visit from a couple of people, Richard Simcock, and you got ladies.
Irina Stoenescu.
You did very well. And then they went out to Vicky Tuas's place, right? And you also made it out there. Tell me about that.
Well, Vicky Tuas, she and her husband, Ed, they live out there in Union, right there on Big Bone Road. And a beautiful drive, by the way. And they have a beautiful place. And she hosted her first annual tomato festival. And I am telling you, it was over the top. I purchased a few tomatoes and for myself and for a good friend.
Yeah.
But it was spectacular. It was a beautiful day. I got to tour the farm that Vicky and Ed have.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of beautiful tomatoes. If you go onto our Facebook page, the heirloom tomatoes that Joseph Simcox and Irina were talking about last week, how important it is to preserve our tomato heritage, you know, those older varieties, even though they may not look perfectly round and unblemished, mm-hmm. that's not what it's about. It's about the uniqueness, the taste that you get from the heirloom tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful turnout. And if you look on Facebook and see where one of my favorites was Green Zebra.
Okay. The Green Zebra.
Green Zebra, yes. That was a very tasty tomato. I like that. A lot of good juicy pulp in it, and that's what I really strive for. I don't like that real thick, meaty tomato without the pulp. The pulp interacts with the mayo, and it all just it sizzles, and it just tantalizes the taste buds.
It blends together.
It blends together. Yes, it does. But if you look at the table, I don't know. Let's see. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
Who do we appreciate?
There's probably almost 40 different varieties of tomatoes here.
Wow.
that Vicky was just so diligent. Her and her friends and family members, they labeled everyone. They put a tomato behind the plate and after all those that they had diced up. And it was a great turnout. Mm-hmm. Colonel D was there, too, from Finley Market, the herb specialist. And it was a fun, full day event. It was just beautiful there.
Right.
And I wish a lot more people would have just been able to take this all in. There was a great crowd, by the way, so it wasn't that it wasn't crowded. It was crowded. Mm-hmm. And Joseph Simcox and Irina gave a great presentation, and it was just a great day.
So this is the first annual.
I hope that it is. We'll have to ask Vicky that. And I would be interested to find out. She had everybody sample things and write down your like top three.
Right.
And I wonder which one came out.
The survey says.
Survey says. It's like Richard, was it Richard Dawson?
Yeah. And so your green zebra was your favorite?
That was that's one of my favorites. Just, I don't know. I can go on and on and on.
Well, tell me about the garlic. Were you getting rid of some vampires here, too?
No, but that's her. She grows garlic. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if you've not had fresh garlic out of your own garden, you are really, really, really missing out. You are. It's night and day. Even, you know, it's just like green beans, just like carrots.
Right.
You know, when it's coming out of the garden, it's over the top. It doesn't get any better than that. And I don't know. I thought that I had posted a nice photograph of her greasy beans. Remember we were talking about greasy mm-hmm. beans early in the season? Along her one greenhouse in the shed wall, a beautiful trellis of greasy beans.
So that would have been a perfect opportunity, too, to talk about canning some of those tomatoes. Did they have anybody out there talking about that?
They could have. Yeah. I'm not sure. But, you know, now is the ideal time to start getting into that mode of thinking about canning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what we harvest. And if you don't harvest a lot of your own tomatoes or cucumbers and get into pickling or making sauces and so forth, step out. Familiarize yourself with the tri-state area mm-hmm. where all these cool farmers markets are.
Right.
And if someone wants to jump in and say, hey, check out this farmers market, most certainly do so. Call us up. Let us know where you think the best farmers market is.
The location and the hours.
Location, and hours, because I always like to go to Lunkin Airport.
Mm-hmm.
Great market over there. Finley, of course. I've been pretty good at getting down to Finley here in recent weeks. And now when you start getting addicted to going to Finley or these markets, it's hard to get out of your blood.
Sure.
And it's just really, really, really good stuff.
And your system appreciates it.
Absolutely. It's eating well. It's eating healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's trying and tasting different things. And I know that Boone County out there by the Extension Office on 18 has a great market. There's also one over there in Erlanger off of Commonwealth at the church. That's a great market, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize. I'm not that familiar with all the... I'm sure there's some great markets over here in Ohio, too. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with those. again, we're giving you an opportunity to give us a shout out to say, hey, these are some markets you want to visit.
And it's that easy. You can email us the farmers market locations, sure. Come to our Facebook page, In and Around the House, post us some pictures, send us some info. We'll be happy to pass that along to our listeners. And you just never know where Tony and I will show up, because we both like to eat. And when you see us,
I've lost a little bit of weight. You know, I'm actually 20 pounds down or better.
Are you?
Yeah, I feel a lot better. I'm not snoring. You can ask Tina. I don't get that nudge in the middle of the night. So I feel a little bit, you know, I feel well rested versus what I was feeling. You know, it's amazing what poor eating habits will do for you as an individual. I mean, you just start putting on the pounds and that's not good. But when you eat healthy, you know, things kind of come into play and they all work naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they do.
And that's right. Eating healthy is the key there. And that's when the birth of the farm to table movement started, was getting back to eating healthy.
Speaking of, I was. Farm to table. Okay. Our good friends at, I can't remember Emily and her husband's last name, from Otto's over in Covington. They also opened up not long ago. And the reason why I'm talking about this is because Tina and I were just down there the other day. There's a little place in Main Strauss, right across from Cock and Bull, called Frida's. It's a little taco place.
Oh.
And you can tacos and margaritas. And
you go down there on Tuesday?
Is there a Tuesday thing?
Well,
we went down there the other day.
Taco Tuesday.
Oh, Taco Tuesday? That, yeah. Well, I don't know. But I had... it was a Brussels sprouts taco with a peanut sauce over it. It was to die for.
Wow.
Oh, I'm not kidding you. It was over the top. Reasonably priced, but they participate in that farm-to-table type of concept. Mm-hmm. And if you've not been down there, get down there. I live up in Taylor Mill. I'm not always down in Covington like I want to be, but it's happening. There's some really cool places over there.
Awesome.
And that farm to table is a great concept, but Ernie, you and Lisa need to get down there.
Okay. Maybe we'll make that a date night for us, you and I and Lisa and Tina.
We can do that.
On your tab. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back.
That was good. We're cutting up about some stuff we're talking about in between the break there.
Yes, we are. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And been covering a lot of ground today. Got a lot of things we're trying to touch base on. And we're just talking about farm to table and how important that is in today. It's especially important when you want to try to control the quality of food that goes into your system.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Big time. And as I put this together, I'm going to try and tie this in real quick. Katie and I, we went on a little road trip the other day. When we were visiting, we like to go out and visit with different potential clients and so forth. And along the way, one of the stops was over at over in Northern Kentucky, right there in Fort Mitchell, W. Stevens Kitchen Design Center. Do you know what I'm talking about right there by Greyhound Grill?
I know exactly where that is.
Oh, I'm telling you, if you get an opportunity, go in there. It's really done up so well and so neat inside. And the clever design ideas that Wayne and his staff came up with to put that all together or pull it together. And then the designs, the kitchen cabinetry designs and the things you can select from. I was just like a kid in a candy store, because we just did our kitchen remodel a couple of years ago. Knowing what I know now and seeing the different things that are out there and available just makes you salivate. Makes you think about, man, I wish I would have taken this avenue, so to speak, or done this.
Yeah.
But, you know, hindsight's always 20/20.
It never fails.
It never fails.
You know, when you go through a project, you get finished, and then you think, oh, I wish I had added this or changed this or... The next time, right. I'm going to do this differently.
And Wayne was so kind to, you know, give us a little bit of his time to talk to Katie and myself and just what they're all about and what's going on. And they just did a really cool job in there. And if you're looking to do some kitchen work, check this place out, because Wayne has a great reputation, and you won't be disappointed. The cabinet displays, the kitchen setups, the countertops, it's really cool and unique.
And we were talking about fresh foods and stuff, and you had got some information there about how long some things lasted. It's surprising. How some things really go bad before you notice it.
It is. And what Ernie's bringing up, I have some really cool information, and this all kind of ties into the kitchen area. And in particular, as I was saying, Katie and I went on a field trip the other day. We also stopped at the appliance loft over there on Madison Avenue in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Tina and I did our kitchen not long ago, we purchased some appliances there from the appliance loft. Very top quality stuff. A great staff, very knowledgeable staff, and just some unique things there. You'll get the right information that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But part of our, you know, our project when we were working on the kitchen, we were looking to purchase a new refrigerator that was counter depth, not one of those types of refrigerators. It's like, you know, it's the biggest thing in the kitchen. So the counter depth refrigerator came into play in such a way with us, and working with the fine folks at the appliance loft was, and Patty, you know Patty, by the way.
I do.
Yes, very knowledgeable, and she was so helpful. And but the counter depth refrigerator for us made a couple things come into play. One is we don't store too much stuff that's we'd never get to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The bigger the refrigerator, the more stuff you put in there, the more leftovers you put in there. The counter depth just looks a lot better in appearance. It's not as bulky. It's not in a way. And this is something that Tina and I kind of went over back and forth. I'm 6 foot four, and I like things up high.
Sure.
So I was one of those people. I like the freezer up top.
Yeah.
Not Tina. She wanted it on the bottom.
How did you do with that negotiation?
Who do you think won?
I'm assuming that your freezer is on the bottom.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And you know, we picked up a Fisher & Paykel refrigerator from the appliance loft, and it stores our food so well. I am not making that up, and it's not because we were visiting over there the other day. But things have lasted a lot longer in our refrigerator with that refrigerator than ever before. And then, which led me to believe, you know, with all the flooding and so forth that's going on down in New Orleans, you know, how long do things stay in a refrigerator? How long do things last when the electric goes off? You have any idea? Especially if you're in the freezer. Well, this is kind of interesting. And this is information that I got from the extension office, you know, some time ago.
No, I will usually text Lisa and go, you think this is any good? And her response is, probably not, throw it away.
Well, this is part of the information from the educational programs of the Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service. So I this is not me making this up. I'm just kind of going off of this information. Without power, just to give you an example, a refrigerator will keep food cool for 4 to 6 hours. Depending on the temperature, okay? And the refrigerator, the freezer section should keep your food frozen for 2 days if it's full, and if it's half full, for 1 day. So that's just to let give you an idea. If you were to lose power, unfortunately, for whatever reason, that's kind of interesting information to know. And I'm one of those people, if something's in a refrigerator for too long of a period, I'm that if in doubt, throw it out.
Yeah.
I do. I'm not going to take any chances on getting sick because of my stupidity or, you know, stumble across some goofy foodborne illness of
right.
some sort based upon how long I stored something in a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
So throw something my way. Ask me how long something might last.
Milk.
Milk? Well, fluid milk 5 to 7 days after the sell-by date. This is cool information.
Yeah.
I need to post this.
Yeah.
Sour cream, for example, 1 month.
A month after the date?
No, just 1 month.
Oh, okay.
Now, yogurt would be 7 days after the sell-by date. So that's important, too. When you're at the grocery store, look at the sell-by date.
Yeah. Normally, see, we don't have these issues at our house because I just plow through food like nobody's business. It rarely gets to that sell-by date in our house. But let's say hamburger.
Hamburger, what's it? I'm looking for it on here.
Or chicken, something.
Well,
like
wait
that.
A minute. I got like 4 pages here to sift through, so I'm looking for hamburger on here. As soon as I find it, I'll tell you. Chicken or turkey whole,
uh-huh.
1 to 2 days.
Okay.
Meat, casserole, soups, and stews. This is cooked leftover stuff, 3 to 4 days. And gravy
chili, at least we'll make a batch of chili, and the longer it sits in there, the happier I am.
Why?
It tastes so good.
When you get a little bit of that mold buildup, like cheese, does that make you happy?
Oh, it just always, it's like stew. She'll make homemade stew, and the longer it sits, like 2 or 3 days after that, it just seems so much better.
Yeah. For example, let's just say, and I love corned beef. Who doesn't like corned beef? A Reuben? Come on. Yeah. There you go. And Lisa makes the bomb, the best, the sauerkraut.
You mentioned the canning season, but hold that thought. We need to pause for a moment. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking food. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground, touching base on a few things. And we were talking about how the long food lasts in your refrigerator when it's safe. And as I mentioned, it never gets to that point.
That's good. I've been guilty of allowing things to hang around a little too long in the fridge or even on a counter if it's produce.
So let me ask you, you and your brother, the two of you, or were there three in your family growing up?
Two siblings. I have a sister and a brother. Okay. Yeah.
See, I come from a little larger family, and mine was that if it's in there, eat all of it. Because when you come back, it may not be.
It may not be there. I understand. Well, I didn't have to worry about that because my brother had a hard time remembering when dinner was. So it was like we would sit down for dinner and Johnny was nowhere to be found. Yeah. So therefore, we would help ourselves, but my parents would always make sure he had a plate to eat and they would put foil over it and wait for him to come in when he strolled in.
Hey, that was a rule of thumb at our house, too. If you didn't make it to the dinner when it was served, you're on your own.
I wouldn't miss one. And I miss my mom's cooking, too. Yeah. Was it always the most, was it the healthiest? It was fried. And I'll tell you what. Do you remember, but we're going to go back to this because we're talking about recommended food storage times, cold and dry, with refrigerators and frozen foods. Because, on average, this is an interesting statistic right here. A survey indicated that Americans discard $14 worth of food every week because of improper storage.
That's probably true. Yeah.
So 14 times X number of weeks throughout the course of the year kind of adds up. So really it's over $500.
Yeah.
A couple good nights out, a couple movies, dinners, et cetera, et cetera. But very, very interesting to say the least. But going back to my mom's cooking, did your mom ever make... Now, we couldn't afford salmon when I was younger, the good stuff, but the salmon croquettes?
No, if we had fish, it was something we caught. Bluegill.
Carp and catfish.
We did eat some catfish, but no carp. But it was rare.
I still like if you ate carp. Just tell me the truth, will you?
No, I never, never. But now, Dad would take us fishing on occasions and we'd bring home a mess of fish and, that was, you always had to be cautious of the bones because it wasn't like we all had fillet knives back in the day.
But no, it was one of those caught in your throat.
Yeah.
That old Heimlich maneuver. If it would help, I don't know. Chew that up, son.
But we didn't have salmon croquet at all.
Well, well, that was out of a can, and, here we go. And my mom would make that stuff stretch and work out, and I love that with the more ketchup, the better.
Now, let me share this with you. We always had this running joke in our family, too. The cranberry sauce that came out of a can over Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We jokingly referred that as, what's the fish egg thing?
Escargot.
No.
Okay.
What is the, golly, I can't think of it. It's a delicacy.
Caviar?
You're right. Caviar. Yeah. I said escargot. That's snail. Jesus. Like, duh.
Caviar.
Throw something at me, will you?
It would be hilarious as we'd all gather around the Thanksgiving table
and
mom would open that up and put it on a little dish and we'd go, we're having caviar again. And it was just a joke with the Brown family.
I got it. How stupid me. I said escargot. Throw something at me, will you?
So you were talking about food storage and how much we throw away and all that. And your mom used to fix some great meals.
Oh, she did. And she would even, like, if we had mashed potatoes from the night before, we would have those potato pancakes the next day with something.
Yep.
Maybe fried chicken, pork chops, all that good stuff. Did you ever hear or have anything called city chicken?
Oh, yeah. Barbecue city chicken.
No, wait a minute.
It's great.
When Tina told me about this, my wife, that they would always have city chicken, I'm like, what are you talking about? Is that pigeon? And what is that?
If you get a chance, you know where Binky's Market is there?
Yeah.
Just outside of...
right at the foot of Sleepy Hollow Hill. Right. Yeah.
Go in there and ask for some city chicken, and then take it home, put it on the grill, throw a little barbecue sauce on there, a little seasoning.
But what is city chicken?
Well,
tell me.
We used to call it pigeon on a stick. That's what the old man would call it. Mom would fix up some city chicken, and it was always the thing was, we having that pigeon on the stick again tonight, honey. But I'm not kidding you. Go down to Finks. That's one of the best places. Little mom and pop shop. You walk right up to the counter like you used to back in the day. And get yourself some city chicken. And get the Colonel D's. Get your favorite
herbs, the spices, and rubs.
Absolutely. Throw it on the grill.
Absolutely.
See, here I am giving you a little grilling advice, Tony.
Well,
but you're gonna
you don't have to give me any grilling advice. Yeah. But, you know, last but not least, back on this refrigeration thing, this is really important, too. If, in fact, you like shellfish or seafood, this is really important because I'm always asking my fishmonger. No, I'm just kidding. the guys over at Lukens at Finley Market, how long can you keep some of these things in a refrigerator? Because you got to be really, really careful.
Sure.
If you're buying scallops, and I love scallops, 2 to 3 days. So if you're trying to plan out your meal, this is very important to know. Shrimp, for example, is 2 to 3 days. Crab meat. Now, I know you like squid and you like it whole. But, when you're having shellfish, you know, like crabs and lobster, 1 to 2 days. So your refrigeration time, storage time is very small. So make sure you don't let, because you definitely can get sick.
I'm one of those, if I'm going to eat fish, I'm going to eat it fresh and be finished with it. I would never even consider saying, I didn't finish this fish. I'm going to put it back in the fridge and then come back later and go, yeah, I think it's good.
Right.
Not me.
Well, you know,
I'm going to eat it all. Fish is really good. I like
fish, especially on a grill.
I love fish.
Chilean sea bass is really good. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, remember the old orange roughy? A lot of people used to eat orange roughy. Salmon. I really like salmon, too, on a grill. Yeah. Just a good old sauce. But anyway, I just kind of wanted to touch base on that because I kind of fed off of when Katie and I were out visiting with some potential clients the other day. We did make a stop at the appliance loft. If, in fact, you're looking for an appliance, definitely stop there. Make sure it's one of your stops in your search for a really top-quality appliance. And also, we were over there at Wayne Stevens, his kitchen design center. He is going to come in with us and do a show on designing your kitchen, laying it out. He's got a lot of background with that. And another place, Ernie, that we stopped, and it's down on 4th Street, and I understand that it is the oldest business in Cincinnati.
Wow.
You want to guess?
Scotty's?
No.
Arnold's.
You see, these are all restaurants.
Well, bars and restaurants.
This is not a restaurant.
I don't know. We'll find out what it is when we come back.
The oldest
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been covering a lot of ground today, talking about a few things inside the house, about your appliances and stuff. And I was just telling Tony off air that I was coming out of the hardware store the other day, and I overheard two public works guys, I'm assuming public works because they had their yellow vests on and maybe working for construction guys, I don't know. But apparently, Bill, one of the guys in the... I'll call him Bill. I wasn't sure what his name was, but he had paid for something inside the store right in front of me with a large bill. And it turns and walks back to the truck, and his buddy says, daggone it, man. If I had your money, I'd just go ahead and burn mine. And that's made me think of you because I'm always teasing you about your money.
Why? And, why? Because last week you referred to me as an aristocrat, and I didn't dig that, man. I am the furthest from. I am. I'm an indentured servant. You think that's funny? Oh, just come on. You're killing me with that one. I like it.
But it did. It made me laugh so hard. I got in the car and made myself a note. You got to tell Tony about that. I had your money. I just go ahead and burn it.
Yeah.
So welcome back. We've been talking a lot about some things inside the house and getting a lot of things covered about the refrigerator, appliances. And Tony, we have Linda from Batavia on the line who is going to take us back outside. And we talk about this quite a bit, the crabapple tree. How old is your tree, Linda?
The one that I'm talking about is probably about 5 years old. Oh, 4 years old.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what it's doing, it looks really sparse this year. And the leaves are getting like black spots on them.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that, you know, I want you to keep in mind, you know, keep an eye on it next year especially, okay? Uh-huh. Now, this has not been the ideal growing season for a lot of different various trees and shrubs and so forth this year. With all the moisture that we've had, the high temperatures, and the high humidity levels, it has really created a lot of issues. It has, and uh-huh. it's just stuff that we got to wait and see and let it run its course.
Okay.
But a lot of times, you know, the crabapple tree in particular, there's some things that can come about with the crabapple tree as a result of all these environmental issues and the combinations of, for example, fire blight. You know,
that's what I was kind of afraid it might be.
Well, and blight usually is where the tips of the branches are just totally brown or black.
Yeah, now that happens sometimes on my pear tree.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And it can also happen, you know, with various pears and apples and so forth. Also, you know, scab, that can also be another problem. Rust, powdery mildew. And these are things that you can, as a homeowner, provided that the tree is manageable, that you can spray on your own with certain products. And, for example, let's just say you're experiencing some issues with fire blight.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to treat it as a homeowner, I would encourage you to use a fixed copper kind of product, fungicide.
Okay.
And typically when you're doing that, what's important, and I don't have this in front of me, but there are various stages of the tree's development as it's growing or as it's starting to push out and put on new growth in the early part of the season. And you can do it when it's dormant with fixed copper. And then, you know, there's other couple of things that you can do as it starts to open up and before it goes into bloom. Things like mancozeb is another really good fungicide to use as a homeowner.
Okay.
Chlorothalonil is another good fungicide to use as a homeowner. You may also see that go under another name called Daconil. Uh-huh. You know, and again, I'm not expecting you to remember all of this. However,
right.
If you, and this is the importance of going to local garden centers and local nurseries.
Right. We got him out here at Bard, so.
There you go.
I was going to go back to him and just take the leaf in, but I thought, well, I'll give you guys a call first.
Yeah, there's a, I was looking at a persimmon tree in our garden center the other day. It has a lot of black spots on it, and it's an anthracnose. Uh-huh. And, you know, I just shake my head, and I'm thinking, you know, everything has just been conducive enough. It's like the perfect storm for all these disease issues amongst trees and shrubs.
Right.
And you have a really good top-notch nursery there close to you at Bard's. And Bob and I, we kind of will text back and forth with various things or questions that we'll ask one another. Have you seen this? What's going on? Or
right.
And we were just talking about that earlier in the show. He had a customer that came in and brought in, of all things, a weed. We were trying to identify it, and I'm like, I'm not really familiar with it. And it, of all things, it was Japanese stilt grass. And obviously, it's been around, and I did a little research on it. Ernie and I were talking about it earlier, but that's the beauty of those of us that have garden centers and that are in the industry. We all talk amongst ourselves, and we don't profess to know everything. Mm-hmm. However,
you can try to find it out.
We, amongst ourselves, as a tight-knit group, we can always certainly come about with the right answer or diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And also, never be afraid to use your extension service. A wealth of knowledge, our extension services, both in Ohio and Kentucky, and things that the Japanese still grasp. Bob and I were struggling with that, and the customer has... customer comes into his place often, took it to the extension office, and that's what they identified it as being. And that's the beauty of it.
Right.
And when we talk about turf grasses and different things, let me tell you this. I find it very impossible for somebody to tell you what every turf is out in somebody's lawn or any given place or any given park.
Mm-hmm.
Or arboretum, because you really need to look at things under a microscope for certain characteristics. And that's the beauty of this industry. It's every day I learn something, but mm-hmm. you have a great nursery over there in your neck
great.
Of the woods.
I'll just watch it, and next year after it blooms, if I start seeing that again, you know, I'll go up to Bard and talk to him.
Do you, let me ask you this, are you internet savvy? Do you ever get online?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Do you have a pencil in front of you or an ink pen by chance?
Yeah, I do.
Write down this publication. It is ID-21.
Okay.
If you just type ID-21 and then behind it, University of Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
This is a great publication because in the back of this publication, it tells you the various stages of the tip development of your crab apple tree or your fruit tree or whatever tree.
Okay.
And that's when you spray. It's not by calendar date. It's where that particular tree is in its growth cycle for that season.
Okay.
And again, in the dormant seasons when you want to go after this, and then the green tip, you know, when it starts to flush out.
Okay.
For other various things. And you'll find that very, very useful.
Yeah. But, and, I mean, you know, for our other plants, too, that mm-hmm. would be nice to get on there and look at that.
Absolutely. And if anyone is to encourage you to spray it now and try to give you the remedy or the quick fix, no, it's not going to happen. This all got into the tree some time ago.
Okay.
All right.
Keep
us in the loop.
Much.
You have
you
a great weekend.
Have a good day.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. It's a great way to stay in touch with us is, of course, through our Facebook page and online.
Mm-hmm.
You can email us in and around the house at B105.com.
Definitely. And real quick, I did look up the Japanese stilt grass.
Yeah.
And it said that it was first identified, or its origin was back in the early 1900s, and it was found in Tennessee. But I didn't know this. It was used as in a dried material way as a packing agent. Like, you know, you would pack things with it.
Instead of the peanuts?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they wouldn't have had those back then.
So I thought that was interesting. So yeah. I guess that's how they kind of got introduced here into the United States.
By everybody pulling it out and throwing it out. And if it didn't burn in the pile, it kind of got...
I guess that seed was around and there
root.
You are.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting how things get its origin.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that very good question there, by the way, too. A lot of issues are going on with shrubs and various trees, and mm-hmm. Tim Back even sent out an email indicating such. But it's just one of those things. Once you see those issues, and if they've already presented themselves, the reactive approach is really not the answer. And don't waste your money and do not waste your time. You need to be proactive and go after it before these things and these issues set in and set themselves up to where they're visible. And then it's like, whoa, mm-hmm. where did that come from?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we talked earlier in the show, but I also wanted to bring this back up about how we have a little bit of a cloudy sky today, maybe a shower, a pop-up shower around the area, but then... starting tomorrow for 3 or 4 days, the weather forecast is picture perfect. Temperatures right in the 70s. Overnight lows might dip down to the 50s. And looking at your lawn and your landscape beds, these are the days that you want to take steps to move to the future, so to speak, in how that's going to react next year.
Definitely.
As we were just talking about.
Most definitely.
Not really... where we it's still too early to put down the Fertiloom.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about fall fertilization here as we get into September, but It's not too early to think about that. You know, right. If you're out at your local garden center or nursery, and pick up that Fertilume three-step program, pick up your two fall applications, however you want to do it, whatever you need to pick up, you'll be ready.
Uh-huh.
And be ready right around Labor Day weekend. If you're one of those fortunate homeowners that everything's uptight and you got that yard looking good and dapper, spiffy, whatever, be ready to fertilize it at the beginning of September,
mm-hmm.
and you will get the enjoyment and the added value of that quick green up with that iron that's in Lawn Food Plus Iron. That's the orange bag. And I'm telling you, you will be the envy of the neighborhood.
Right.
It works. Now, you have to have a lawn to do this. I mean, it's not the magic bullet.
It doesn't work on the driveway.
Doesn't work on the driveway. But get it off of your driveway because those little iron pellets will kind of, you'll see those little iron marks. Now, before we gone into that last break, we were teasing our audience with, And I can't say this with certainty, but I understand if it's not the oldest, it's one of the oldest businesses in Cincinnati. And it's on 4th Street. It starts with a B. And we were, Katie and I made a stop in there the other day, and I was so glad that we did.
Oh, and it wasn't a bar or restaurant or pub?
No, bar starts with a B, though. I like that. Or bistro. It wasn't a restaurant.
The first thing I thought of was Arnold's because it's the oldest operating bar restaurant in Cincinnati. So I guess with a B, I'm baffled.
Bromwell's. Yes.
Oh.
And reason why we stopped in there because we thought the type of things that Bromwell's is well known for are fireplaces, you know, the ceramic logs and gas log sets. And I wanted to make it a point to stop in there because that's where I bought my gas log set back in, I want to say, 2000, 2001,
uh-huh.
and I've never had a problem with it. It's just as good today as it was back then, and it wasn't back then. It wasn't a cheap item either, but it's always one of those things we talk about often. You get what you pay for.
Oh, yeah.
Quality.
Yeah.
Quality, quality, quality. They have some beautiful fireplace screens. The enclosures, like those front glass enclosures.
Right.
And I did not know this. Katie and I ventured upstairs, and they had some of the neatest stuff upstairs. So they're not really all into, you know, the fireplaces and all that good stuff is their mainstay. But they do a lot of other interesting things as well. And we're going to have those guys in sometime this fall.
I want
to talk about what they do because it was so neat over there. And if you get an opportunity, whoever's listening, stop down on 4th Street. Put a couple of quarters in the meter and make it a point to stop at Bromwell's because the upstairs is really decorated in a cool way.
I want to hear more about that. Hold that thought. We need to pause for a moment. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, you were telling me about your trip to Bromwell's, and I can't wait to hear a little bit more. So it's not just the fireplace thing you were talking
about?
No,
not today. They've expanded their line of items,
uh-huh.
and there were some really cool furniture pieces upstairs, artwork, different really interesting home items. And I was just telling you in the break that one in particular that I saw was this Iron Man. It's an iron figure of a guy, like, rappelling or scaling a wall
mm-hmm.
on a rope. And I think that would... I bought some, Tina and I, when we were in Atlanta, but from a company called Global Views. Really cool stuff. And I spotted that down there. So there's some really, wow. really interesting home item things at Bromwell's. Check it out. And I'm looking forward to having those guys in as well.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions. Unfortunately, we had one of our listeners call in with a recommendation for me. There's two fireplaces at our house,
mm-hmm.
and I lost the phone number for somebody to come by and take a look. There are two separate flues, but if there's a fire in the fireplace mm-hmm. upstairs, the mm-hmm. downstairs gets a little smoke. It doesn't fill it with smoke, but it's
right.
enough that
right.
it's annoying.
Well, I'm sure these guys have contacts because they do... They do customized fireplace installs.
Oh.
Really, I'm telling you, there's fireplaces all over. You can get various ideas.
Yeah.
Those are the guys to talk to. And,
yeah, probably.
We're definitely
going
to have them in. So okay. we'll take it from there because as we start approaching the fall season, you're burning wood in the fireplace. It all comes together. And going back to what you're saying about the drafting element.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somebody can shed some light on that as well.
It would be great.
Most definitely.
Because I know, looking at this forecast, if it were up to Lisa, there would be a fire in the fireplace sometime next week, and I'm going to hold off. You know,
back off, back up.
It's too early.
Step off.
It's like seeing that pumpkin spice creamer this morning when I went to Kroger to pick up my my coffee creamer.
Step off, booger off.
Too early.
Yeah, booger off.
Right.
Step off.
Right,
I'm with you.
But it's never too early to start thinking about what's going to happen with your lawn. And I told Tony that I got a chance to mow my lawn last night and noticed that where one of the stumps is that we've been working on getting removed or burned out, there's some of that creeping Charlie starting to trickle back into the lawn. Also have some nuts edge that just kind of, this must be where all
driving
the seed, it blew in or blows into this corner up by the front.
It blowed in there, Ernie. You're all tore up about it.
We were going there.
It blowed in.
But when you walk up to the front of the house, the rest of the lawn looks great, and this little corner section is all nutsedge.
Happens. It happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
Get over it. Don't lose any sleep. It's aggravating. Yeah. I have a little bit too, but in various different areas than where I was treating in the past.
Yeah.
And again, treating for nutsedge can really be a 2-year process, maybe a 3, because you kill the main plant, so to speak, or the parent plant, but all those little nutlets underground, that intricate root structure, those nutlets, they emerge the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it takes you a little bit of time. Also, if you're really battling it, you know, the product that's going to help you really get a foothold on the nutsedge issue is High Yield's Nutsedge Killer. And it has halosulfuron in it. It's a little cellophane packet. And I want to touch on this because we don't want you cutting open the cellophane packet and pouring it into the tank sprayer. The cellophane packet, excuse me, will just dissipate.
Okay.
So stir it up thoroughly, and the most important thing that you can do is add a spreader sticker or the surfactant that we talk about a lot. That helps facilitate the absorption and that product staying on that waxy nut sedge blade.
Let's touch on that just a little bit about the spreader sticker, the surfactant,
mm-hmm.
with the temperature range. What's that?
Well, we always talk about temperature ranges, you know, when we're spraying things in the lawn, and I'm glad you brought that up. Ideally, 65 to 85 is the ideal range, and with next week's temperatures being in the 70s, it's not going to get any better than this.
Yeah.
If you're seriously struggling against some issues, broadleaf weeds, grassy weeds, whatever it is in your lawn or in your landscape beds, you better take advantage of next week.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely take advantage of it, because we're turning the corner here in a few weeks into September. And if you're working in the lawn, and if you want to, and here's the other element here. If you have some issues in your lawn and they're large issues, I want you to use Roundup or I want you to use Kills All from High Yield.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because by the time things die off, you can go ahead and sow grass seed. If you're going to use something selective, and when we say selective, I'm going to talk about weed-free zone in particular from Fertilum,
mm-hmm.
my favorite, all right? Now, there's a waiting period. There's a 14-day waiting period before you can sow grass seed.
I got
so you got to look at that calendar, and you have to determine. You have to map this out, because if you spray with weed-free zone today, where does 14 days take you out into the future to where you can sow grass seed? And then if you're trying to spray and kill some of those more difficult to get rid of weeds and you have to spray again, guess what? There's another 14 days. So you're 28.
Okay.
You like the math?
I do.
So you're at the end of September.
You didn't even have to take your shoes off.
No. I'm missing 3 toes, by the way. You know, sewer lid dropped on them. No, kidding. But those are the things you need to take into consideration. So if you're doing a sizable job, and next week, Mike Clare from the Boone County Extension Office will be in here from 8 till 9, and we're going to really cover, and we're going to go over it hard, we're going to go over it heavy, we're going to go over it in great detail, what you need to do to get your lawn back into shape.
I want to come back to that. Hang on just a second. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And as I mentioned, might see a shower or two today, a pop-up shower. Don't let it ruin your plans. But starting tomorrow, gorgeous weather for 3 or 4 days. Great to get out in your lawn. Too early to put down the first step Fertiloom program, but it's not too early to treat for some weeds. And Tony was talking a little bit about the weed-free zone and a couple other applications, and that's what caught my ear, is that I can get out there and get a few things treated.
Absolutely. This is the ideal upcoming week with temperatures, and the weather's going to be nice. There isn't any rain in the forecast for 3 or 4 days.
Right.
And after if we have a couple showers today, now we did yesterday too in various areas, excuse me. But the beauty of it is that after a rainfall, everybody's happy in the lawn, uh-huh. Even the weeds. They're all dancing.
There's a
little party going on. Everybody's happy. So that makes the product even more effective. So keep that in mind. You don't want to spray when it's a drought type of situation. To the contrary, that a lot of people think when it's dry and it's hot and I scout my lawn, it's best to treat my weeds that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm, not at all. The more leaf surface or blade surface that there is, whatever it is that you're spraying, the more effective that it is. It's almost like rubbing up on poison ivy. If you rub up on it with your little finger, it's just a little area. But the whole arm, it gets it all.
Yeah. So this is, if you're planning on treating for some weed issues, you don't want to run out and cut the lawn.
No.
Okay.
You could.
I cut mine yesterday, so I can treat them.
I like to do it like this. 2 days, don't mow your lawn 2 days before you treat and 2 days after.
Okay.
Therefore, you're in good shape, especially with your nut sedge.
Right. Tuesday would be a safe. Well, actually, Monday would be safe enough for me to go out and treat that.
Lawns are a good surface that you can spray. And also, Creeping Charlie, you talk about that often. And I've had a lot of people come into the garden center asking about Creeping Charlie. And the thing of it is, you want to go after that a couple times throughout the year. I mean, you can go after it however often you want.
Right.
But, usually when it's in bloom or shortly thereafter it blooms is a great opportunity to get rid of some Creeping Charlie. And you're going to have to come at it at another time or two.
Right.
You really are. And don't be discouraged. And be ready to do it. Don't just spray it once and say, I can't get rid of it. Because there's those stolons and a little bit of that rhizome activity that's going on. So you kill everything up on top, but it doesn't always get those stolons and rhizomes. And they'll pop their heads up again. And you got to go after them a second time. And maybe even a third time. And don't let that discourage you.
Right.
But if you stay with it, like anything, it's all about my favorite word, perseverance.
Oh, yeah.
You got to stay with it. And you'll be the victor. You will eventually overcome some of those weed issues. And, the other thing, we were talking about the surfactant, using the spreader sticker with various products. That is a great product to have. And High Yield makes one, and you will find it in the local garden centers and nurseries. It's a $5 or $6 item. It lasts a long time. And usually on average, when you mix up something in a tank sprayer, a gallon will call for, 2 teaspoons of a surfactant. And you'll mix that in and gently agitate it. That helps with the absorption. It helps facilitate that product getting into what it is that you're spraying quicker.
Now, you're going to think this is a goofy question. Does it matter whether or not it's hot, warm, cold water you're using?
I just use tepid water, lukewarm water.
Yeah.
It could, no.
Okay.
To my knowledge, no. So, yeah, good question there.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're not going to boil any water, are you? Are you using ice water?
I really want to kill it. I'm going to boil the water first and then put it in the tank sprayer.
You might do a little more than kill it. And the other day
I was curious, use a garden hose to fill up your sprayer if there was a temperature.
Yeah. And, something else, too, a lot of people, a friend of mine came in the store yesterday. Well, he calls me up. It's like, Tony, you going to be around for a bit? Yeah, stop on down. And he brings in this clump of grass, and he's like, how do I get rid of this? What is this? It's Nimblewill. That is a perennial grassy weed,
mm-hmm.
And it can take over a lawn, and you will notice it. It has real pointy leaves, It's very distinguishable. And Nimblewill you know, it's going to take a couple applications to get rid of. Uh-huh. And I would just go to guns, and I would use Killzall or Roundup, something with glyphosate in it. And you'll be successful with getting rid of it eventually. Also, if, in fact, you're not sure if you have nimble will or not, just take it into one of your local garden centers or nurseries and see if they can help you identify it. And a lot of times, nimble will during the winter months, it browns off,
mm-hmm.
you know, like zoysia does and so forth. And it will be brown in the spring months and then eventually start to green up. That's nimble will.
Gotcha.
And there's another product that you can use that's selective to go after it. Little pricey, really pricey, and it's called Tenacity. And if you're looking for Tenacity, you might have somebody at one of your local garden centers and nurseries order it for you. But that's a selective way to go about killing nimble will or getting rid of it or controlling it or eradicating it, however you want to put it, you know, without killing your turf. But I would just go ahead and use Killzall.
Gotcha.
And take care of it.
749-D105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Jessica on the line. We'll come to you, Jessica, right after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Hey, we have a great time on Saturday morning. Thank you so much for joining us. And, Tony, we have Jessica on the line from Bethel, and she has an ant issue. Ooh. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks
How are you?
For hanging on.
Yeah.
Good. No problem. So we actually, over the last couple weeks, have discovered the large black ants,
mm-hmm.
But they're not in our kitchen. They are actually showing up in the bathrooms and mm-hmm. some in the bedrooms. And we only see them up on the top of the walls, kind of between the wall and the ceilings. We do have young kids and a couple dogs in the house, so mm-hmm. I was wondering if you had any suggestions for any safe ways to get rid of them.
Well, it sounds like they might be carpenter ants.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if it's a severe enough infestation, you know, that's not really good for the structural integrity of the house.
Okay.
They hence the name carpenter, you know, they're working on it, so to speak. You know, if you want to spray inside, and a product that you can use inside is a Killabug from High okay. Yield. That is something I might, you know, I would definitely consider spraying indoors.
Okay.
And that has deltamethrin in it, Killabug 2 from High Yield. And, you know, just when you spray it, just make sure that until it dries that your kids stay away from it. And just, you know, stay in the crevices, the cracks, and things like that. The other okay. thing I would encourage you to do as a homeowner, obviously, is work from the outside, too. You know, I would spray around the outside of the foundation. And, again, as things dry, until things dry, you know, keep your kids away from those areas. 38 plus is one of my favorite, you know, all-time, you know, insect dish repellents or killers. It's from High Yield. And you don't want to spray that inside, okay? It's exterior only. Spray the foundation. You can use granular products. You know, Killabug does some granular products that you can put in the landscape beds. But, you know, with the rain that we've had, too, a lot of the rain activity, that gets these guys really moving. But they're looking for moisture, too. And usually you'll see those guys in the bathrooms where there's moisture.
Okay.
So it all comes hand in hand. The other thing, if you want to go about it in a different roundabout way, it's not really a roundabout way, I would have a professional exterminator take a look at it.
Okay.
And go from there. But you certainly don't want an issue with those down the road.
Exactly. Yeah, we actually put a new deck on the front of our house, so we're thinking maybe that may have stirred them up a little bit if they were outside in the decking or things like that.
Yeah. You know, and there's even products, and I don't know the name of the products, that the different approaches that are being taken now with a lot of exterminators is there are granular products, and I've seen this, you know, with my own eyes firsthand. When they put the granular products down where there's ant activity on the ground, the ants will pick that granular product up immediately, and they take it back to the nest, and it eliminates everybody that's hanging out around the nest. It's really interesting how they've, you know, how modern technology or how we've found out that we can take things back to the nest and get rid of insects that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that product is, but it was an exterminating company I saw using it, and it was really neat. But if you have a problem, I would call a professional.
Okay.
You know, if you think you can control it yourself, that's one thing. In the kitchen, we've always heard, too, right, Ernie? Cinnamon is good
to use.
That's
right. Yep, little traces of cinnamon.
Little traces of cinnamon in the kitchen. But that's not your issue. It's the carpenter ants.
Okay.
Well, let us know what you end up doing. And, again, you can go by, stop in one of your local garden centers, look for high yields, kill a bug.
Okay.
I've used it before indoors for spiders down in the basement area, and it works very well. It has it doesn't have a real long, lengthy residual effect because, after a while, you have to reapply it. But it's been very effective for me. And try and treat outside around the house, too, and see if that doesn't help.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Right, thanks. 7.9 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Joe on the line from Cleves who's got some issues with his vegetable garden. What's going on with your garden, Joe?
Well, first I got to say thanks, guys. About a year and a half ago, I called you with a problem with some boxwoods. You guys gave me some advice to trim them back, bounce back, and they look great. I appreciate that.
Good.
This year, my vegetable garden really has had almost no yield out of it. We're doing some peppers and some zucchini and some tomatoes. And it's a combination of problems. One of them was I had some rodents who were getting in and kind of eating on some of the plants early on. But the other one that has me perplexed is my zucchini this year, I only got three zucchini off of a plant, and then the stem just kind of rotted out. And it just died early on. I didn't get much out of it. I'm guessing I need to do something to kind of prepare the soil this fall for next year, but I was looking for some advice.
Well, the zucchini, that's very interesting to say the least. It could be a number of things. Probably, was it looking good, and all of a sudden it just, you went out the next day or morning and like, wow, it's wilted, it's gone?
It was one of those where it looked good, I went out, the stem was doing really well, coming out of the ground, and then all of a sudden it looked like the stem just kind of burst open, and then it just wilted.
Well, that could be like the squash vine borer. Or squash bugs, they'll introduce and vector diseases. The squash vine borer gets inside the stem, actually. And it will clog up that stem, the main artery, and then everything else beyond that wilts. That could be very well happening. So those are the kind of things that, you got to keep an eye out for, so to speak. And it can be a real problem in a lot of ways. A lot of times people will use row covers as things are developing, their plants. They keep the insects off or the moss off from getting in there and laying eggs, et cetera.
Okay.
So I would have to venture to say that that's what you're combating.
Okay.
So, and I wish that you would have, do you still have that activity going on?
Because I had the two squash, the two zucchini vine or plants that I had, they didn't last very long, and I kind of just pulled them out.
Yeah.
And let it go. But, in years past, I usually get a good yield off of them, enough to make that, six or seven batches of zucchini bread and fry up a bunch. This year, it just nothing. And I had a lot of end rot this year, so I was trying to put the bloom suit on it, and I was really perplexed as to why it wasn't doing much this year. The only thing I really had growing is a jalapeno pepper and some cucumber. I put a couple cucumber vines this year, and they've actually done decent.
Yeah, my cukes are kind of like, and I plant things late, but my cukes, because I think the temperature, they're really not setting like I want them to. Full of blooms. So I'm just waiting for that whole pollination effort to take place. But this year's been a really bizarre year. And I want to go back to something you just mentioned a second ago. You're getting a lot of blossom end rot. You're getting a lot of bottom end rot on fruit.
Bottom end rot on the zucchini.
Mm-hmm.
Was having a fair number of that. The tomatoes did all right. It was the zucchini that was getting it. Like, it was starting to grow really well. And all of a sudden, the very end of the fruit would just turn yellow.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, a lot of times, too, it's a lack of some, you know, other types of nutrients, you know, like calcium comes into play a lot of times with peppers, especially in tomatoes, and could very well be with the zucchini. There's a lot of things, you know, that's why I like to use well-balanced fertilizers and use those that are natural, those that have other trace elements of nutrients in it, like magnesium and boron and so forth and calcium. And Espoma's tomato tone has definitely been one of my go-to fertilizers for vegetables.
I use that this year. I actually put some in each hole, a little bit each hole when I planted this year, and I put down two or three applications of it as things were growing.
Interesting.
About a week and a half apart, just a little bit here.
Yeah.
To get it, because the area that it's in is a relatively new bed. It's only about 3 years old, and the first year we did all right. The second year, you know, I over the winter I took on and chopped up all of my leaves from the yard, made them real fine, and kind of mixed them in. And then this past year, before the year started, I went out, got a little bit of compost and some new topsoil because it had settled down. So I wanted to kind of bring the level of the bed back up a little bit. And I got a rototiller and really mixed things in with it. And I thought that might have helped, but it just didn't do much. At least not for the zucchini. The tomatoes have done all right if I get to them before the rodents.
Yeah, well, on the zucchini, you know, usually if any diseases really get into them, you know, and a lot of diseases are vectored by insects, you know, it could be a bacterial wilt, it could be, you know, a botrytis kind of situation with that. It's really hard to say. And something that would be beneficial for you, too, is when situations like that occur or come about, is to take something like that into your local extension office where they can send it off and have it analyzed. Because we can guess a number of things. And believe me, when those guys can pinpoint something, it takes the guessing game out or eliminates a lot of possibilities. And then you can go right to the issue and solve it.
Okay. You have to help me out here. I've heard you say it before, but what is exactly the extension office?
Well, the extension office is an organization that usually is run by the state government, and what they do, they provide a lot of services to the community, typically free of charge. Now, Ohio is a little different than Kentucky. I don't know all about the extension office over here in Ohio, but still, nonetheless, it's a very good entity. Where are you located?
I'm out in Cleves.
You're out in Cleves? I'll try and find a number for you to call the extension service. I know over in Kentucky, every county has an extension office, and I think it used to be like that or still is like that with the state of Ohio.
Okay.
And, you know, having that information, knowing what you're dealing with, definitely helps you for the next upcoming season, knowing if you need to change something or not plant that for a while or rotate your crops. So all that comes into play.
Okay.
So hang in there. We'll see what we can find out, and we'll give you that number over the air here in just a few minutes before we conclude the show.
Great.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we did discover some new information for Joe in Cleves, who had an issue with his vegetable gardens, or as my mom used to say, veggie tables.
Veggie tables. Yeah. I like that. Well, the number we have for you, try this, is 513-946-8989.
Give me that number again.
513-946-8989. Power windows, power door locks. Daryl, remember Daryl from Rocky Ford?
Oh, my gosh.
Bring it on through. That's we crack up with that. But going back to that particular question and concern with the zucchini, you know, he had mentioned that he's been using Espoma's, you know, tomato tone, which has an amount of calcium built into that. Usually when you start getting that soft rot or end rot, that's a calcium deficiency. And if it's there and it's present, that's a good thing. However, you know, there's another element that comes into play, and it's irregular watering habits.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when you go from extreme dry to extreme wet or vice versa, things still get locked up and don't translocate and move up into the plant like it should. So to give you a simple analogy, is if calcium is, in fact, available to that plant and it's dry for a long period of time, and it's not wet and there's no moisture to take it up through the system, it's not going to get up into the plant, especially when the fruit's developing. So, you know, make sure that you keep things evenly moist and you practice good watering habits. And a telltale sign there is if you have calcium present, it's there. It's just how it's being uptake or taken up into the plant. So that's very important.
Gotcha.
The other thing, too, you know, it's either going to be a bacterial wilt, or like I said, or some sort of a blight, a botrytis blight. And a lot of times those types of diseases are brought about by a number of things and usually vectored by beetles. You know, the cucumber beetle, we were talking about the squash bug, and I was thinking, too, maybe the squash vine borer can have an effect there when he was talking about how things were wilted. But there's a number of things, but the most important item here is when we're trying to eliminate and funnel all these possibilities down into one conclusive, this is the culprit or this is the reason.
Yeah.
You know, the extension office really is a valuable tool to all of us. So, again, that number real quick is 513-946-8989. If you have any questions, feel free to send us an email at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. If you're unable to get or connect with somebody, and if not, let us know and we'll put you onto the right area and people to see.
And we're going to have someone from an extension office coming in the next couple of weeks. Is that right?
Next week.
Mike Clare. Great. It's going to be a good show.
Definitely.
Hey, Tony, we have Bill on the line from Hamilton who's got a question about phosphate. Is that right? Is that right, Bill?
Yeah, lime with phosphate.
Lime. When I hear somebody talk about lime, I always think of Granny from the Beverly Hillbillies making her soap and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Granny Clampett.
Out by the cement pond.
Granny Clampett. So what is the question regarding?
Does it kill bugs?
You know, that's another natural way to go about killing bugs from what I understand. I've never done it myself to really give you any feedback. Phosphate of lime, a lot of people, I've heard them in the past use it for flea issues and so forth out in the lawn.
All right.
That's a good question, and I can't honestly answer that.
Don't they use that to dispose of deer carcasses when they're out on the road?
I believe so. That's that powdery substance that you'll see on the side of the road.
I can only imagine if it does that to deer, it'll probably kill some bugs, too.
it probably does, and it keeps the maggot activity down, so there's probably some truth to that. What is it you're trying to get rid of by chance, or what's
fleas?
Fleas,
yeah. Well, that's what I've heard it used for most commonly, amongst other things, I'm sure. But you know what? Hey, go at it. Let me know.
I got to give them about 4 days of nice weather first.
Yeah, that's going to happen after today. Forecast is calling for 4 or 5 days of temperatures in the 70s, maybe breaking into the 80s overnight lows. Close to 60, so you'll have a couple of days to get that done.
So you have pets, I take it?
Yeah, or? But the neighborhood is full of cats. I'm in an older neighborhood, and it's cat haven.
Oh, wow. You know, it's funny you say that because there's various types of fleas, from what I understand. I can tell you my dealings with fleas is one time we had a two-family apartment with hardwood floors. And boy, it took some time to get rid of those guys.
Oh, wow.
They can lie dormant. This is interesting. A flea can lie dormant for up to 6 months, from what I understand, maybe even longer, give or take, until it feels the slightest of vibrations. And then it becomes active and it wants to get on a blood source.
Yeah.
And boy, they're wicked. Ooh. I tell this to people all the time. I'd rather have issues with roaches than fleas. As disgusting as that sounds, because fleas are very difficult to eradicate, especially feline fleas, from what I understand.
I'm just wondering if that phosphate won't kill roaches, too, then.
I don't know. You know what? You have to give it a whirl and give us a shout back is all I can take, because you're our eyes and ears.
And we'll check. I'm going to be Professor Ledbetter out there in New York.
There you go.
And we'll check with our county extension agent next week to find out, and we'll get a definite answer for you.
Okay, man. I enjoy your show.
Thank you so much. All right. Appreciate you listening.
Good call.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. As always, a great way to stay connected with us is jump onto our Facebook page, look us up, like us, and it's an awesome way to post some pictures, post some questions. You can email us in and around the house at b105.com. And what do you got going on down at Jackson's? Almost forgot to ask you.
Oh, we're getting ready for the fall.
Yeah.
Stuff's looking good. We're getting some of the fall decor set up inside the store in the garden center. So we're just turning the corner, and we're just trying to, you know, make the adjustment, you know, from a seasonal standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've actually started to do some Halloween things, actually. You know, we have a really cool display of things and items if you're into that kind of stuff. And you know, we have some nice plant material. We have some perennials and so forth, and some decent shrubbery still left that if you're wanting to do some things in the landscape, certainly stop by, give us a yell. But we're getting ready to go into the fall season. We're all thinking mums, the ornamental peppers, the decorative ornamental cabbage and kale. The mustards are really a hot item this year and have been in recent years. The ornamental mustards give you some really cool texture and look in your containers mm-hmm. and in the landscape beds. So that's what it's going to be. Look for some of the pansies. You'll be seeing pansies here before long at your local garden centers and nurseries. They give you a great bang for your buck in cool weather situations. And in a lot of situations, you get them into the ground, they get rooted in. You're more than likely to see them next spring. They will winter over for the most part.
And I mentioned our Facebook page. We stopped out and visited our friend Todd out from Baton's, and they have a great mum set up out there. You can check out that video and get to your local home and garden center. Start thinking about some fall decorations. As Tony mentioned, they're getting ready for Halloween and for the fall. And I know we don't want to rush away the last couple of weeks of summer, but we always want you to think ahead. And it's too early for pumpkin spice anything just yet.
I don't know. You like the kind of frou-frou stuff. I'm surprised. I'm surprised you haven't already been in it.
And I'll get some of it, but I always like to wait to get that first frost in.
Pour my coffee strong, hot, and black. That's how I like it. And what little hair I have, it'll stand up on my head.
No, it won't. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.